It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. O'Malik joins Dan Patterson, Jill Duffy for PC Magazine. We're going to obviously talk a little bit about what happened this week at IFA, the new Samsung devices, the new Sony devices, the new Motorola devices. But really, all anybody cares about is, what is Apple going to do on Tuesday? We'll talk about that, too. It's all next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 474, recorded September 7th, 2014. I am too sexy for my iWatch. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Citrix GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, audible_com. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with stamps.com. Use stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And really, we're going to be covering the week ahead's tech news somewhat today. This has been a big week in Berlin with the IFA conference and some big announcements. And then, of course, Apple gets to steal the limelight on Tuesday. Let's introduce our panel, starting to my left. Jill Duffy is here. Great to have you back once again, Jill. It's been a while.
And yeah, thanks for having me back.
Where are you? You're in a beautiful spot here. Is this your office?
This is PC Mag office in New York. Yeah, we're over on between Madison Avenue and Park Avenue.
Love it.
Over in the Flatiron area.
Gorgeous. And thank just you. Down the hall from you, actually, is Dan Patterson. Hi, Dan.
Hey, what's going on?
Good hey, to Joe. See you. Yeah. We actually had to break them up. They were in the same building, and we actually had to separate them. By the way, Jill, I'm sorry about the pictures I've been seeing on the internet of you. I don't know how this happened, and I'm sure that you are chagrined. Can you show this, Chad? This is a shocking, shocking dereliction of duty from iCloud, and I think you should sue Apple. No, I'm just kidding. I love that picture.
My sister took that.
That's fun. And I wasn't searching for pictures of you, honest. And there he is, O'Malik, ladies and gentlemen, the guy in charge at GigaOM, one of the world's best bloggers, and always a great guy to have on the Twitter. It's good to see you again, O'Malik.
Good to see you.
You're hard to get in the summer because you travel a lot during the summer, which is great.
I travel all the time. Yeah. I love traveling.
Well, we're thrilled we can get you on. We did not intentionally, I did not last week talk about the fappening, the release of... scandalous pictures of well-known celebrities. It was breaking news last Sunday, and frankly, I didn't want to publicize it in any way. At this point, I don't think there's any way anybody doesn't know about it, and I think there is a tech angle, believe it or not, to this, and that is the security of the cloud. And Apple especially has to be thinking very hard about this, because on Tuesday, Tim Cook's going to take the stage and is going to tell everybody, you should let Apple store all your photos. That's one of the new features of iOS 8. And we think that you should let Apple contain all your credit cards and use an iPhone to make your payments. Apple's stock tanked a little bit on Friday. I'm wondering if Apple has a PR problem and how they're going to deal with it. Jill, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think that this very targeted hacking of celebrity photos should be treated as the criminal activity that it is.
Absolutely. Nobody denies that. Yeah.
Just, horrendous stuff. I think the average user needs to keep in mind that their own personal private photos are probably, you know, they might have some embarrassing photos, but they're not going to lead to a hacker making money off of them or any kind of big headlines, right? Like, so somebody who is not a big celebrity is probably not going to be a target. Like, I feel like that's something that needs to be said just as people freak out about this. The other thing is, you know, digital content is easy to collect, it's easy to find, and it's easy to repurpose and reprint. So anytime you have a digital asset, you've always got to remember that it can be republished, reprinted, reproduced. That said, I think that in terms of our credit cards and our payment systems, we do have fairly secure ways of handling that, right? And I think there are lots of other bodies that provide checks and balances to make sure that we're handling it in a secure and appropriate way. I don't know if Apple is really going to have a PR problem. And the reason is because anytime there's a big leak or hack or data breach, people worry about it and then they don't change their behavior. Like, if people were genuinely worried, they would have changed their behavior by now. And they don't, and they haven't, right? So I think this is all going to kind of blow over. I don't know that it necessarily should, but I think it is going to blow over and that people are going to look the other way.
Well, it's interesting because the same week, Home Depot had a big data breach. About 64% of Home Depot's transactions are through credit cards. And the same, I think it's the same flaw that we've seen in other point-of-sale systems. And people aren't really talking about that because there's no nude photos involved. So I do think that, yes, you're right. These data breaches happen. They happen all the time. But this, for some, you know, for pretty obvious reasons, I guess, has captured people's attention. And I think it is a little bit of a PR danger for Apple. Do you agree?
I think there is an element of the PR danger. But the reality is that we live in a world where, you know, all these companies, whether it's Apple, Target, Home Depot, every time a breach like this happens, it is a breach of trust on their part because we give them our information because as average human beings, you think they're going to take care of it and they don't, right? Even though they say they are taking good care of security, but they don't. And in reality is that I'm more worried about what's happening with Target and Home Depot and all these organizations which are leaking our personal information pretty much every day. Like, it's not just the credit cards. They have a lot more other personal right. information they have. So, you know, like, Target wants people to give them their driver's licenses so that they can make sure that their identity is the right when somebody uses a credit card or somebody. I mean, they want a copy of your driver's license. I'm just like, you couldn't protect my credit card information.
Why would I give you this?
To that end, Apple can also use that as a selling point and say, look, you know, you don't have to trust Target or Home Depot. These amateurs trust us. I mean, this iCloud hack, we should also say this alleged hack, was not so much a hack as it was a phishing expedition. And so if anyone is vulnerable, every cloud vendor is vulnerable to an attack on their brand equity. But I think that Apple can really turn this around and use it as a selling point and say, look, we understand security, we understand NFC, and we understand payments and processing. Trust us, don't trust Target.
Right. I would have liked to see Apple be more clear in its apology about the whole episode. I think what you're seeing right now is, you know, in the past, we used to have break-ins and robberies. People would break into your house and take your things. And now we see the same thing happening at a larger scale. But a much larger scale, at a network scale, on our digital life. So I think we have these break-ins, and I think there is no protection. I don't think the people who are supposed to protect us actually know what they're doing. I definitely believe that we need, like, they should be talking about, you know, two-factor security. They should be talking about, you know, brute force security, but they don't. They wait till something crazy to happen to actually try and force people into that action. And I think that is where there is a room for improvement. And I'm not just saying Apple. It goes across every single company, whether it's a tech company or a non-tech company.
I think Apple has an opportunity here, but it's going to take some very careful parsing of language. Tim Cook already took to the Wall Street Journal. This is Apple's kind of house organ when they want to tell people something. They call, hey, can we give you an interview? And said, in effect, he didn't quite apologize, but he came as close as you can. He says, when I step back from this terrible scenario that happened and say, what more could we have done? I think about the awareness piece. I think we have a responsibility to ratchet that up. That's not really an engineering thing. There's definitely some culpability on Apple's part. Christina Warren, who was on last week, who's wonderful at Mashable, did the obvious thing. She bought the Elcomsoft password cracker, cracked her own iCloud account, and even though she had two-factor turned on, was able to download her iCloud backup without a warning from Apple. This was after this all happened. And that's still the case, that you don't, even though Apple has two-factor, you don't need it to restore a backup. And by the way, Jonathan Jodarski, who's one of the security guys who's been critical of Apple in the past, looked at the data that had been downloaded and was felt pretty conclusively that it was, in fact, in most cases, iCloud backups that the hackers got. That's why there was video as well as photos. Some of the file names and folder names were typical of an iCloud backup restore. So, and that would make a lot of sense. It also raises the issue that even though what you're seeing is pictures, if somebody got my iCloud backup or your iCloud backup, they got a lot more than pictures. They got everything. So that could actually be even more severe than just the privacy invasion. I feel like, though, Apple does have an opportunity. They could step forward and say, okay, we didn't, you know, we've done, we more than any company around cares the more, and I can tell you all the things we've done, but we still got in, so we're going to do more, and it's a real opportunity for Apple to step it up and make it a win. But I think he has to, he can't ignore it. He can't, and we shall see. I mean, this is very poor timing for Apple. They had planned a big coming out party on Tuesday.
Well, I think that one of the points Jill was driving towards is very correct, that although this has happened, we are also moving into an era where this is simply part of consumer expectation and understanding that you or someone you know will be hacked. Things will happen to you. The degree to which you have protected your information and what type of information it is will determine how many people, if anyone, cares. But this is just going to happen.
Yeah, but that doesn't reassure anybody.
Oh, don't worry.
It's just business as usual on the internet.
That's not my job.
But it is Apple's job. And I feel like they've really got a challenge here. This is pretty poor timing for Apple, I think. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about what happened this week, because that's normally what we talk about. We will also talk about what's going on. There's some rumors leaking out that big white structure being built next to the Flint Center for Tuesday's Apple announcement is actually a fashion runway. You guys are, I know you're all, you know, all week long, Jill and Dan, you're going to Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week in New York City. You're very excited about the runway. Well, we're going to have a runway in Cupertino.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for the new fashion statements from Apple. We'll talk about that in a second. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix. Citrix GoToMeeting is the way we meet. We had a GoToMeeting the other day. In fact, anytime I have a conference call, I just set up a GoToMeeting because it's really easy to create a meeting with GoToMeeting. I could do it right from my email. You automatically get an email inviting you to the meeting. But the best thing about GoToMeeting is, yes, it's a conference call. In fact, you don't even have to use a phone bridge, although they offer it. You could just use your iPad's microphone and speakers, or your phone's microphone and speakers, your computer's microphone and speakers. But you can also turn that phone conference into an HD video conference using the camera on your devices, and they look great, crystal clear HD video, at the same time as you're sharing your screen, so everybody's on the same page. It really is a multimedia extravaganza. It's the best way to meet. Use whatever part of it at any time you need it. And that's why we always start a GoToMeeting, a conference call with GoToMeeting, because it's just, now I've got everything, every tool I need. You can even say to the person you're presenting, okay, share, I'm going to let you take control. You show us your screen so you can collaborate. You can present together in real time. You can review documents, see each other face to face. No more travel. I know, Om, you're always on a plane. You could save some time. You just have a GoToMeeting. It's like being in person, but you don't have to be. I want you to try it free right now for 30 days. When you visit GoToMeeting.com, click that big orange try it free button. I guess it's kind of a red orange now. Start my 30-day free trial. But do use the offer code TWIT so they know you saw it on Twit, and you'll get that 30 days absolutely free. Go to meeting. The next time you have a meeting, make it a go to meeting. Citrix, go to meeting. The offer code is TWIT. So no trip to Berlin for you, Mr. Malik. You like to travel, but you didn't want to go to IFA, huh?
No. You have somebody there. You know, I know
Gigaom does, but what IFA seems like it's more. I didn't hear much about IFA 10 years ago. It's been going on since 1924. Suddenly, it's a huge event.
I think we are more aware of more things because of the network now, right?
Right. So
all these things were not news a few years ago, and now they are, and rightfully so. I think we have a society which is in transition, and all these things which we have previously ignored, such as, you know, legislation and jurisdictions and all those things, are suddenly becoming part of conversation, and rightfully so, because internet always mimics our real life. So why should we not be talking about all these issues? And I think that's why it's become a big issue.
It also has, it's better timing from the point of view of manufacturers than the January CES, because this fourth quarter is a big quarter. And this, if you're going to announce a new phone, if you're Samsung or you don't think so? Everybody buys all year round now?
And they're all riding the coattails of Apple, I think. That's what it really is.
Yeah, it's the week before the Apple announcement. That's what really matters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is what Apple does, right? They set an agenda.
Yeah. I think it's hysterical that Apple's never said they're doing a watch or a wearable of any kind. But everybody is so sure that they are that every company now has a watch. And I don't think it came out of nowhere. I think it came out of the fact that they said, oh, Apple's doing one. We got to do one, right?
Oh, I think it's the other way around.
You think they were going to do it anyway, Jill?
No, I think that a lot of other companies were already doing it, and that Apple said, let's see if it's going to be a trend that's taking any kind of hold, and then let's do one once we've learned from other people's mistakes.
So you think Apple's been wise in waiting?
I do, yeah. I think they've been very wise in that sense. I was thinking about the announcements that came out of CES last year and this whole timing of product releases and launches, and it's funny because so many of the new products that I saw at CES still aren't on the market. Like, a lot of them are trying to come out in that November, December window so that they can have a big holiday push. But I think a lot of them still aren't going to be ready for that. So it's funny because you have, especially with the onset of like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and all these crowdsourcing campaigns, you have a lot of companies that have an idea, they come up with a prototype, they release images of the product that they want to develop. And then you can have 2 or 3 years where no product is made. So if that's what the small guys are doing, right? Like, they're getting people excited. They're trying to get a little money, a little attention. And Apple is just kind of quietly behind its closed curtains working on its stuff. Then when it reveals, it says, we're going to have a product ready. It's going to be ready to buy in 2 weeks. Here are all the details of it. Go. And that's a very, very different and, I think, more powerful position to be in.
Well, I think if you wanted to look and see what people could do wrong, we've got many, many examples now in the wearable space of things that just were bad ideas. So maybe Apple has saved a lot of money that way. We can eliminate glasses. Om, you wore Google Glass for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's about how long I wore it for.
And I got hit by a friend on my face. I said, that's not a good idea. So I took it off. As somebody said, Google Glass is injurious to your love life.
Yeah. Well, if you're wearing them, you're not going to have a love life.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. It's
even the watches are like somewhat.
I think so, too. Samsung announced a watch that is the most god-awful. It looks like you're under home arrest. It is huge.
The joint venture between Open Ceremony and Intel, did you see that example?
That's weird, too. That's like jewelry, right?
Yep. I would love a watch from a company that makes microprocessors. That is what I'm really looking for.
They call it a smart bracelet.
Yeah.
It's like so silly that I can't even pay too much attention to it. But I don't know what kind of functionality it had. Was it like a smart watch? I mean, did it even tell the time? It looked like it had stones on it. things like crystals.
I don't know. I look at all these watches. I actually love watches. I wear watches.
Well, that's why I'm asking you. You do, yes.
And I think, you know, most of these are like, they're quite ungainly, and they're pretty thick. You know, they're not elegant, and they are trying to do too many things, and it's you know, watches are basically, you need to, there are three issues with all these smart watches. One is, you got to have a great hardware, which has to be thin and have similar, meet the expectations of the watches we have, in the analog watches we have, number one. Number two, it's a UI expectation. Like, we don't quite know what we need from a smartwatch. Just like, you know, at least in electronic devices, we have known what we wanted from them. For instance, when iPod came out, we knew exactly what we were looking for from the iPod. So when we saw the device, the hardware and the software, which was the Apple software and the UI, it made perfect sense, and we wanted to own one of those. I think right now it's not very clear what these, you know, things are trying to do, what problem they're trying to solve. And hopefully we will have a better answer on Tuesday. Maybe Apple has an answer for that. But so far, whatever I have seen, I have not wanted to own a single one of them.
Well, this is what I mean by agenda setting. As consumers, we have an understanding of Apple as a company that has precisely targeted certain audiences with their products. Sometimes they flop, like the big red stereo or the big boombox they had. But for the most part, Apple's brand reputation is one of understanding what consumers want and how they want it. Everyone else can flood the market with a device that is kind of flailing and the cliche of a solution looking for a problem. But Apple, we trust, or at least we think we have a guess that Apple really understands the problems that consumers have. And once they establish a product in that marketplace, the rest of the companies will play me too, me too, me too with products that emulate that marketplace desire.
I kind of like Jill's notion, though, that Apple, in this case, is sitting back and waiting and watching as everybody kind of throws themselves against the spears, trying ideas. And this Galaxy Gear S watch, which looks like an iPhone bent around your wrist, is one of those things. Although, you know, I shouldn't poo-poo it, because this is one of the first watches that has its own phone built in. You don't need a phone with this watch except to update it. You can just use this to make phone calls. It's got 3G, so it has its own interface. It's a big watch, but on the other hand, it does a lot of things. What lessons is Apple taking from these other failures? The Pebble's not a failure. I would say Pebble's been very successful. The people, I don't know why, but people seem to like the Pebble.
Yeah, I think Pebble is probably the best known watch at this point, and has done a good job creating like an app market for itself. And it's what, about 2 years old at this point?
Is it that old? Yeah, it was a Kickstarter project. They raised, at the time, the most anybody had ever raised, millions of dollars to make it. And it actually came out, which is kind of nice for a Kickstarter project. And at least two people I'm looking at are wearing them right in front of me right now. And they're proudly raising their fist. And everybody else, who is anybody wearing a smartwatch in the, we have a pretty big audience here besides you, Chad. Nobody. Nobody in the audience is wearing a smart. Wait a minute, you are in the back? Which one are you wearing? No, he says, no, I'm not. He's embarrassed.
No, he's just waving at you.
He's just waving. Hi, I'm back here. Nice to see you. I just feel like humans, normal humans, are not going to wear these silly things, whether it's Pebble, a Pebble or...
Pebble reminds me of that Rio MP3 player before iPad came out. You know, like, people love them, but till the iPad
came out. Apple said, here's what you do. And that's what Apple's done traditionally. You're right. And I guess that's what your point was, Jill, that they waited, they watched other crappy MP3 players, and then they said, no, this is how you do it. It's called an iPod. They watched other crappy smartphones. They said, no, this is how you do it. It's called an iPhone.
Well, and let's not forget that Apple did dump a bunch of money into a company that makes other wearables, right? I mean, we will see the technology, which is really what will be interesting, right? Whether they do a watch or not, or when they do a watch, that's less interesting than the technology that could potentially be going into this, including a ton of wireless stuff, transfer stuff, and NFC. And I mean... what's the one wearable people do wear and give a damn about across demographics? It's headphones, it's cans. And
right.
and I can absolutely see something positioned the same type of technology that would be in a watch in a number of different small wearable products, not just one.
New York Times did a profile of Johnny Ive. I guess you could argue this is the first admission by anybody that Apple's looking at watches. Johnny Ive said Switzerland should be worried. I don't know if Johnny really thinks that Switzerland makes most watches, but apparently he says Switzerland is in trouble.
Yeah, that's kind of a, you know, a far-reaching and overreaching statement.
I think so, too. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, it's like, let's see what you got first before you make statements like that. I don't think you can make a boast like that, you know.
But that's how Apple's been lately.
They've been big talkers.
You know, Eddie Q said earlier this year at the Recode conference, the code conference, we've got the best product pipeline I've seen in 25 years. Apple's been trash talking of late, and I'm waiting for them to deliver.
Well, I don't think it's trash talking. It was just like they were saying they have new products coming. But I do think that saying that, you know, what he might have meant is that, you know, the Swatch or the Switzerland industry relies on the fact that people want to put a watch on their wrist, and Apple will have a product which will take up their real estate. Like that's, it may not be a watch, it can be something else, but they are going to occupy the real estate on your wrist, which is where the watch industry gets challenged. But I think people buy watches for a whole different reason. I mean, they're not buying it to see time. That is pretty clear.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm actually pretty excited about Tuesday, because that would also define in many ways, like, you know, the future of Apple, whether, you know, they got it or they're just full of, you know, empty words.
Here is the latest thing is to fly a drone over things. This is the drone's eye view of the big white box that is being built right next to the Flint Center in Cupertino. The Flint Center is where Apple will make this announcement on Tuesday. And they have been constructing now for some time this building, a fairly big building. It's almost as big as the center itself. The latest rumor is that there is a fashion runway, a fashion style catwalk. I am too sexy for my watch, too sexy for my watch. That they will invite the journalists to. Jill, Dan, Om, you've got to be going to the Apple event, right?
I am going to the Apple event.
So,
by the way, you should stick to your day job. No singing for you.
But I am too sexy for my watch. I think it is exciting. I think you're going to see something pretty big. We're sending Renee Ritchie and Andy Anacco down there. We're sending a camera crew down there. We're hoping we can get some video with them after the announcement. We'll be covering the announcement live starting at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Justine will be joining us, Sarah Lane, Mike Elgin, Alex Lindsay. We're putting a lot – Apple's events are always a big event for us, but I think this is maybe the biggest event since the iPad announcement. It's certainly been a long time since Apple's entered a new category. The iPad in 2010 is the last time. And we all agree they're going to announce a wearable.
Yeah.
I think so. You won't be able to buy it, probably not till next year, but they'll announce it.
I would settle for a big iPhone.
And I would, too, a 5.5-inch iPhone. We expect to see that, a 4.7-inch iPhone, which doesn't sound big anymore, but is, in fact, big for Apple. Jill, do you use an iPhone or are you an Android person?
I have both. It's funny, you know, you just said that Apple hasn't really come into a new category since 2010. And I feel like that's not really that long ago.
Well, it's 4 years,
So much pressure on companies to come up with something new. And people are so hungry for new stuff. And part of that makes me sad because I want to get a little bit more life out of the existing technology that I have. I wish that were more the trend, is that we would see devices that were made to last, you know, 10 years or even 8 years, but they don't. I mean, how often do you replace a laptop? I ask people that all the time and they tell me 2-3 years or as soon as they can write it off on their taxes. So I think that there is a lot of pressure for Apple to come into a new category, to create new things, to create an iPhone that is simply a different size with a smaller this and a faster that. But there's part of me that, you know, doesn't want to buy into all that consumerism and just wants a product that works for a long time and looks good, and I'd be happy owning it for 5 or 6 years.
Chat room saying, amen, Jill. You sing it. I think a lot of consumers, a lot of real world people do feel like this stuff is moving too fast. It's Wall Street and investors who want new products all the time, new categories. Because that's how you enter a new category and dominate it. That's where you can really make new money. And it's pretty clear, for instance, iPad sales, tablet sales in general are kind of tailing off because they've saturated the market.
There is no reason to upgrade, right? A lot of the stuff.
There isn't.
My mom uses her iPad 1, and she's perfectly happy with it. Everything is great. Like, you know, maybe next time I go see her, I'll take a new one. But she doesn't need one. Like, it just works. So, you know, I have an iPad Air, and I have an iPad Mini, which is the old iPad Mini, not the new one.
However, do you survive?
I don't really need the new one. Like, the iPad Air was just a gift from a friend.
I'm teasing, obviously.
By the way,
that's killed the television industry. A lot of the Japanese television manufacturers are suffering, bleeding, hemorrhaging money because everybody has a TV. And they tried 3D, hoping that you would say, oh, I got to have a new 3D TV. And nobody bought it. Now they're trying 4K. So there is, you can see the pressure on the industry to come up with new stuff. And you can also see the natural conservatism of, I guess we've learned, we've gone through that gadget phase where we just got everything the minute it came out. We've learned. Who can afford that?
What I do love one thing which Apple does is they actually try and move a technology which we don't see, all the underlying technology of phones. And, you know, the cameras and the processors and all those things, they push that forward. And I think that is one aspect of tech we don't quite appreciate as much because it is hidden from the naked eye. And I think that is the kind of progress we need more and more. So products become more useful and they last longer. Like, you know, like if you look at some of the newer iPads, they're just they're perfect as a replacement for your laptop. The software hasn't caught up to them, but the power is there. And I think that's the thing they have done really a good job of. And now the software and the app people should think about how do they take advantage of that.
I'd like to see improved battery life.
Yes.
We're dying there. Motorola also announced new phones this week, the successor to their successful Motorola G, which is a very affordable and yet decent phone. And my favorite phone of the year, the Moto X, which didn't sell all that well, but I think the new one might fix some of those problems. But they also announced a Scarlett Johansson earbud that like a hint that you could put in your ear and you can talk to it. And I say Scarlett Johansson because it's like the earbud, very much like the earbud that they wore and he wore in her. But it's they're not even saying the battery life on the hint. They're saying things like, well, it comes with a container, which will give it a 10 hours, 3 charges. I'm gathering from that. It's got 3 hours battery life. People are complaining about the Moto 360 that it won't make it through the day. Who wants a wristwatch that dies at 6 p.m.?
You know that I'm all into a lot of the fitness wearables, and it's really fun. I've been doing a lot of research lately about what's coming out in that market. And the people who are developing those products are really forward thinking about how does it fit on your body? How can it last a long time? Because if you're running a marathon or if you're training, you're on the field, you need something that's going to last. So I've been seeing a lot of new products that are coming out that have sensors built into things that we already wear. So if you think about a watch as an accessory, but your clothing is something you have to wear regardless. So shirts that have sensors embedded in them, and then there's usually some kind of like core or a pod that will attach to it. And that's where the battery is. That's sort of the hub of all of the information. But the sensors themselves are just built into the clothing. And there's a lot of conductive fabrics that have been made that are now knitted or woven into athletic wear so that they are the sensors themselves. It's just a bit of thread, essentially. And so there's really neat ideas there, too, like hats. So bicycle helmets now that have heart rate monitors built into them, LED and audio feedback that's just built into the helmet so that you're not adding something to what you're already wearing. And that's the kind of stuff that I think is still really in research phase. There will be a few products that are coming to market this year and next, but I think that's the more experimental stuff that I'm personally more excited about, to see how is it going to work. Are people interested in blending these things into their life rather than having a piece that you pop into your ear or a thing that you put onto your wrist?
Do you think, actually, this is, you just made me think that maybe Apple, maybe there is a fashion runway, and that Apple, this would be a cool and surprising thing, doesn't just announce a watch, but a hub for a variety of things that you could put on your clothes or your head or your shoes. And
yeah, I think they would have had to acquire a company, right? Like, that's usually the pattern, is they either they file a patent or they acquire a company that's already doing something like that. And I don't think, to my knowledge, that Apple has done that yet.
Boy, that would be cool, though.
Yeah. If they had a fashion store like an app store, right? Like, they relied on other people maybe to make these components.
But think of the fashion people that Apple has hired. I mean, Apple has gone out to the industry and hired everybody, Jay Blahnik and Angela Arendt. I mean, they've gone out and they've found these people who are the leaders in these areas. Couldn't they have a Skunk Works that nobody knows about, that they've been working on this for 5 years and here it is?
That would be exciting.
I'm fantasizing. I know. I'm just fantasizing. One thing we do think they are doing is talking with American Express, Nordstrom, other credit card makers to put payments, mobile payments, into the iPhone 6. That would make sense if they are indeed putting an NFC chip in it, something Apple's avoided for a long time. This is, again, this is going to be something they're going to need to convince people. Well, we're safe. It's safe to use your iPhone as your wallet. Touch ID will help. The fingerprint sensor will help. Do you think that's where Apple is headed, a payments system? This is something they've had Passbook for a few generations and haven't really capitalized on it. It's just been something you put your boarding pass in. But now you could really use it as a wallet. Is that what they're going to do, Om?
I wouldn't be surprised by that. It would be somewhat of a similar approach they've taken with, you know, the HealthKit kind of a, you know, set of APIs, which they're working with other developers and other companies to use. And I think they will do a similar approach to payments as well. I think they have an opportunity to do that. And it will be actually pretty awesome if they can figure out a way to do seamless mobile payments. My guess is that it would be more at in the OS layer, and which will allow other people,
third parties, just like HealthKit, to add things that plug into it.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's how Passbook works now. If you want Delta's boarding passes in your Passbook, you have to download the Delta app, and then it will see Passbook and automatically use it.
Yeah, Passbook is, you know, still a work in progress.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It's kind of disappointing.
They actually have, you know, they probably will do a better job this time around with the payment stuff. So I am actually, that would actually be nice if they were able to do that.
One thing people always say when I bring this up is, well, Apple has a billion credit cards or whatever it is. All the people who have Apple accounts, iTunes accounts, have stored their credit cards with Apple. But I don't think, I mean, that is not an insurmountable barrier to somebody else. Anybody can get people to enter credit card numbers in. The fact that you have them now does not necessarily give you a big advantage, or does it?
I'm willing to bet. Go ahead.
No, Dan, you go ahead.
I'm willing to bet that Apple has all kinds of metrics that can prove their audience is more valuable, or that their credit card holders are more valuable, more active, and do spend a lot of money. And I wouldn't underestimate the value of Apple's consumers in major cities like San Francisco and New York, particularly in conjunction with relationships with POS vendors. And
see, that's what's going to have to happen. You know,
CVS. Well, they just made a big deal with CVS and, well, allegedly with CVS and Walgreens. And that's where this will go from being something that people might be tentative of to an army of people who are buying crap when they, you know, have to check out. It's just a hell of a lot easier to wave the phone.
Have any of you ever used this touch to pay? I mean, you can do it at McDonald's, right? And Starbucks.
I've tested it with Google Wallet before.
You tested it as part of your journalistic. But
yeah.
Nobody does anybody use it in real life? Like, here, I'm going to.
You know what? I use
the same guys who have Pebble watches are raising their hands again. You guys are early adopters.
There's a couple of apps that I do use regularly. And so it's usually an app that shows a QR code on your phone, and the vendor has another phone that reads that QR code.
That's horrible.
I because I usually get discounts.
That's horrible.
So if something I have to buy anyway and they're going to give me a discount for using my phone, like, that's great. And I do like the idea of not having to pull out my wallet or not necessarily bringing my wallet. So if I'm out, you know, walking my dog and I want to pop into the pet store and I didn't bring my purse with me, like, I like...
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb. If you have to use QR codes, it's not going to fly.
Oh, no, Leo. I mean, what Jill is saying is absolutely correct, at least anecdotally in these hubs. I mean, you can stand in a Starbucks line here in Manhattan, and the amount of people you see waving their phone to pay.
Oh, they do it. Okay.
Even I remember, you know, remember when the big Starbucks mobile hack that happened earlier this year, and I remember thinking, oh, thank God I didn't put that app on my phone. Nope, getting coffee that morning. Customer after customer waving their phone. I know that this is not in maybe Carbondale or Spearfish yet, but it will be. It's here now, and it's actively being used. Right. If people are using QR codes, you betcha they're going to use NFC.
But why did Square then get out of the business? Square had this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, because they had too much debt. I mean, there's a million reasons.
It might not have to do
Square
with adoption. Okay.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's a million reasons Square could determine it's not the business for them that have nothing to do with Apple.
Right.
And if any company can get a large block of consumers, there's no way you would see this happen. I mean, Android has NFC in it. You don't see Google making the types. I mean, I also see Google Wallet, even at the Hot Bagels around the corner from my place in Brooklyn. I see Google Wallet. I never see people using their Google Wallet thing. Apple will get people to do this, especially if it's on a little thing that's on your wrist and all you have to do is this. And then you look kind of silly, but, you know, you're paying. You're paying.
Think about this from a different angle for a second. The way that we handle credit cards and money in this country is completely broken.
That's true.
An insecure system. It's relatively easy to fix, or at least to get rid of the parts that don't work. And there's this opening now that's ripe for innovation. And the company, I think what Dan is kind of saying is the company that has the most reach is Apple, because iOS devices are just still wildly popular in the U.S. and Canada in particular, maybe not worldwide, but iOS is definitely like the platform that everybody uses here. So they have a way in. And I think if we don't think about it from the point of view of, like, do you want to use your smartphone to make payments, and think about it instead of credit cards are a broken system, the market is ready for disruption, then it might make a whole lot more sense why Apple has this opportunity right now.
Well, and
to do this.
And Apple users are sheep and will do anything Apple tells them to do.
Oh, come on. That's silly. I mean, whether they will or not, what you
it's
also
a, I'll
need
tell you one thing.
This...
It's a lot easier to herd Apple users than Android users.
Well, sure.
I mean, they don't start using Passbook, though. I think we just established that.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't try. Apple didn't. They put out a product and they didn't wire it into anything. They didn't put credit cards in it.
You need one more thing in this chain. You don't just need platforms. You need a company that can make deals. And that's what Apple has really done with those POS vendors, with places like American Express, Visa, and MasterCard. You need one entity. And whether or not Apple customers are sheep or not, I mean, Android is a platform, but they're not going to activate their customer base, or Android is not going to make the deals.
No.
Google may, but Android is not. Right?
Google has historically not been able to do those kinds of deals.
Right, exactly. So,
And Apple did, but they did it because they had Steve Jobs, who went in there and made those deals and had the personal, kind of charisma to do that, to pull it off.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tim Cook does. I don't know who goes in and negotiates for Apple now.
The most valuable company in the world. Who cares if it's Steve Jobs or not? It's Apple. I mean, so when Motorola comes knocking on your door, Lenovo, you go, yeah, maybe. Well, you talk to the biz dev guys. When it's Apple, you go, I prioritize that meeting. Okay.
Right. Yeah, that's right. When Apple asks me to meet with them, I always say yes.
I know you
do. Someday they will ask me to meet with them. We're going to take a break. I want to talk about Samsung's curved screen when we come back, too. We didn't get into that at all. The new Galaxy Note Edge. But first, a word from Audible.com. I am a reader once again. I have to say, it makes me very happy. I used to love to read. But then life happens and you get busy. And who has time to read? You know, you've got so much reading you have to do for work and so forth. You don't get to read fiction anymore. Who has the time to sit under a tree and read a book? Well, thank goodness we do have a lot of time in the car, on our commutes, at the gym, on the treadmill, walking the dog, doing the dishes. Wouldn't it be awesome? Wouldn't it be awesome to be able to listen to books? That's what Audible does. The world's biggest bookstore of audio books, 150,000 strong. And there are certain advantages to an audio book. For instance, Joan Rivers' autobiography, Diary of a Mad Diva, well, she reads it. So that listening to Joan Rivers do her autobiography, that's going to have a lot more, more interesting than having just reading the paper, words on the page. There's actually a lot of Joan Rivers. We miss her, and she passed away, of course, this week. There's a lot of Joan Rivers books on Audible.com. Including Men Are Stupid and They Like Big Boobs, A Woman's Guide to Beauty Through Plastic Surgery. Very, very exciting. And Joan Rivers performances, too, live at the London Palladium. I mean, there's some really neat audio content on here that's not just books. I'm going to get you two audio titles. I shouldn't even say books. Audio titles from Audible right now. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's the account I have. I get two books a month. In fact, I love the 22nd of every month when my credits go from 0 to 2. I get so excited because now I get two more books. I have been using Audible, listening to Audible books since the year 2000. I have over 500 books on my Audible library, and I can listen to any of them. They're great Audible apps for all the phone models, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, the beautiful Windows Phone app, of course, Windows and Mac, too. And I listen to Audible on my Sonos. You can listen to Audible everywhere. These are some of the books I'm going to listen to any minute now. I'm getting a little bit behind. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot from David Schaefer, which is supposed to be a great. Are you reading that, Chris? You like it? It's supposed to be. New York Times said it's the book of the summer. Russell Shorto's History of Dutch Manhattan. See, I like to mix fiction, nonfiction, fiction. Gone Girl, the thriller from Gillian Flynn. Thinking Fast and Slow. This is the guy who kind of inspired the whole rational, you know, Freakonomics, the whole behavioral economics field. He's the original Nobel laureate, the original behavioral psychology, behavioral economics, and happiness guy. Inspired Steven Pinker and Malcolm Gladwell. And I've got this as a recommendation from somebody. That's one of the fun things about being an Audible member. When Audible folks get together, they always say, what are you listening to? What do you like? What's your favorite book? Go to audible.com/twit and the number 2, twit2, and sign up for the gold account. I'm sorry, platinum account. You'll get two books, two credits. It's free for the first 30 days. Cancel anytime. In that first 30 days, you'll pay nothing. You do get to keep the books. You'll also get the daily digest of the New York Times or Wall Street Journal. So you'll keep up on current events as well as listen to great stories. Science fiction is fabulous at Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Try it free today. You're going to love it. So Samsung also, now somebody wrote an article, I thought this was actually an interesting piece, that Samsung, there was a failure of nerve at Samsung. They announced the Galaxy Note 4, which is just kind of like a little bit bigger, a little bit better Galaxy Note 3, as Samsung has wanted to do, this very slow evolutionary improvement. And then they also announced the Galaxy Note Edge, which is wacky. It has a screen that curves around the right edge of the phone. I think they're two separate screens. It looks like a single plate of glass, but I've been told that they're two separate screens. And so icons show up there. You could look at the weather. If you're at a meeting or you're at dinner and your spouse has said, if you take out that phone, you're dead, you could just put the phone on the table and surreptitiously look at the edge of the screen, and it's there. Is this just goofy, or is there a market for the Galaxy Note Edge? Who wants to buy this? Anybody? Ohm, are you running out to get this? See, you're all iPhone users. You're sheep.
No, I use an Android phone once in a while. I use OnePlus.
Do you like the idea? I mean, I have to look. I admire Samsung for trying something.
I have an Android phone. You can take a look at it.
Okay, I believe you. I believe you. Oh, you got the OnePlus.
I do.
Do you like that?
Yeah, and I also like Nexus 5. I mean, I'm not.
You like cheap phones?
No, I like good phones.
Yeah. No, I have. That's my my daily phone is the Nexus, rather the OnePlus right now as well. Although I'm really looking at that Moto X. I love a phone that will talk back to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the new Moto X, you don't have to say, okay, Google Now. You can say, yo, Moto, or whatever you want. You can have it say anything. I could say, hey, Needles. I'm going to do that. Oh, don't tell Jeff. I'm going to activate my phone by saying, hey, Needles.
Who's Needles?
Needles is this guy who works here. We like to tease him. But you could do that.
About innovation. I think this phone is innovation for innovation's sake. I think that
you think nobody wants the Edge?
I think a small number of tech forward early adopters are going to want it. They're going to be bored with it in a year when something new comes out.
Right.
I think there's a lot of products that come out like we were saying before, you're trying to get something new and something different out there because there is this hunger and this demand and this pressure on companies to put out something different. And what I think about from time to time is video conferencing, right? Like 40 years ago, this was everybody's dream, would be able to have a phone call and see each other face to face and the whole experience right. In color. So it would be amazing. What we actually want in this day and age is the ability to send text messages.
Right.
And they are really...
We just want a Snapchat, really. That's all we want. Yeah.
SOS. It's so simple. And we just have to always remember, like, the thing that we can do is not necessarily the thing that people will want, right? So I think this phone in particular, the Edge, is another instance of tech companies showing what they can do and not necessarily tapping into something that people want.
But Causes Belli in our chat room says, hey, the Note 1 looked pretty goofy when it came out at 5.5 inches, or what? Actually, it wasn't even that big. It was 5.2 inches. And everybody said, oh, you look like you got a giant candy bar against your ear or whatever. And now a big phone like that, no big deal at all.
You think it's innovation, though? I think is not really innovation.
I think so, and I can't wait for a 5.5-inch iPhone, but I have to agree with you on the Edge. Anybody want to defend the Edge? Ohm, Dan, no. Nothing. All right. Okay. I want to give Samsung a little credit. They're big enough that they can just try anything, right, and hope that something sticks.
They're all waiting for somebody to copy,
They're waiting for Apple.
Yeah.
They're waiting. How can we be expected to come up with a new idea for a phone if Apple just releases one a year? Get to work, Apple. TechCrunch did have this story. I thought this was interesting, that Apple is cranking out so many new iPhones, so many iPhone 6s right now, that, in fact, other phones from other manufacturers are being delayed. All of China now is basically making iPhones as fast as they can. Apple's shipments via FedEx and UPS said to be incredibly high for the holiday quarter, Matthew Panzerino writing in TechCrunch, pointing to a massive number of iPhones. Logistics exec John Martin told Business Week that when Apple, and this was a couple of years ago, but when Apple ramps something like this up, you can't, there's not any air in the room for anybody else. Nothing to say, huh?
Yeah, that's for
agenda setting.
Billions of dollars allow you to do that. They buy capacity, they buy production, and they buy logistic, supply chain. They buy it out. And I think that's what smart companies do if they have a lot of money. I think they're putting their cash asset to most use.
So this isn't a question. The Moto 360, the first round Android Wear watch, sold out within hours of it being made available at Best Buy, online, at Google, and everywhere else. Is that a case of them just not making enough, or is that really incredible demand? What's the story there?
Go ahead.
How many units did they sell?
Well, they don't say. Exactly. We don't know.
Exactly. So 1,000 units came out and they sold out.
Right.
Right. Definition, right?
Right.
I mean, we have no way to contextualize something like this. Right. We can only speculate because all of this is PR spin.
Mark Gurman, who has been very right on, he's a 20-year-old journalist at 9 to 5 Mac, says Apple's wearable, whatever it is, will run third-party apps that big developers like Facebook have already received an SDK. That's not unusual. Apple likes to show off apps at the reveal, and even if the iWatch isn't available Tuesday, they would like to show it working. Do you think, Ohm, do you think... Some have said, you're not going to see an iWatch. They're just going to talk about it. Do you think you'll actually see a product?
We are pretty sure we'll see some kind of a product. Okay. Whether it'll be available for sale is a whole different story.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to be a little delayed.
You can almost look at, I mean, what Om just said a moment ago about the supply chain is so crucial, right? Let's rewind the clock to a couple of years ago when Adrian Chen got that iPhone 4. You remember what a big deal that was, just seeing the casing, the body ahead of time, right?
Right.
It was a huge story. Fast forward a couple of years, and of course, the supply chain, with the advent of smartphones, the supply chain will get a little, you know, there will be more leaks if there is an actual product in that chain. If there was an actual watch that was coming out this week, we would have seen more leaks and more information would be available. So, I mean, just the fact that we've seen iPhone casing we can almost guess with some certainty that, okay, we will probably see an iPhone within the next 2 to 3 weeks. We will not see for sale and this wearable watch thingamajig.
Yeah, I feel like not only would we have seen leaks, I feel like also this is pretty common for Apple. When the iPhone came out, it was 6 months from the announce to the release. When the iPad came out, it was, what, how many months? 3 or 4 months. It's pretty typical when you have a brand new category that you can pre-announce this, and it's going to take a little while to get to market. So I think we can plan on that.
I think we should just be happy that there are new iPhones coming out. My phone is so broken right now.
But don't you love your OnePlus One?
I do like OnePlus One.
But you want an iPhone. You know, I have to admit, I'm salivating for a new iPhone too. How do they do that? It's really amazing.
It's like
good marketing. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. There is more to talk about. I'm not going to talk about phones anymore. I'm bored. We'll see what happens on Tuesday. Everything that has happened before is a wash when Apple announces Tuesday, right? Doesn't matter anymore. Apple's already here. Apple owns this space. Is that right?
Maybe.
Could Apple really stumble? I mean, could it happen that on Tuesday we look at it and we go, oh, wow, that wasn't good? No. Yeah, not because they're so great, but it's a machine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things do go wrong with companies. You know, it's not like they're invincible. I mean, things can and may go wrong with
right.
Companies.
What a better story that would be.
Sorry?
I'm not rooting for anything to go wrong, but you're right. It would be a lot more interesting if Apple announced something like that horrible watch that Samsung announced, and we all looked at it and said, wow, we've been waiting for years for that?
What if it's a TV? Come on, that's funny.
Wouldn't that be funny? An Apple TV.
What's wrong with that?
Oh, come
Nothing's
on.
Nothing's wrong. It would be amazing. But, you know, our speculative heads are in a different world, right?
Everybody would have to rewrite all the articles they've already written.
That would be actually quite fun.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. It'd be hilarious.
You'd see people running out of the Flint Center running to refile. That article is wrong.
We had the exact same conversation a year ago and 2 years ago and 3 years ago, right? It would just be awesome if Apple was like, are releasing a snack basket.
Anything.
Good cheese.
Anything. At this point, something unexpected would be great.
Sliced.
One more thing. Pants. Everybody's going to be wearing Apple jumpsuits from now on. Chris likes that. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. You know who's really capitalizing on a new iPhone? Gazelle, because they will buy your old iPhone. And the key on this is to lock in the price. I know everybody knows what Apple's going to announce on Tuesday. I don't care. The price for the old iPhone goes down the minute they announce. So what you do now, and this is no commitment on your part. You go to gazelle.com and you get a quote for your old iPhone. And you're locked in now for not just for 30 days. That's they always lock you in for 30 days. You're locked in that October 10th because they know it might be hard to get. It might take you a while to get it. It might take you a while to move your date over. You may not be convinced. Whatever. You've now got October 10th isn't much more than 30 days, but they've been doing this for a couple of weeks. That's going to give you some time, and you'll get top dollar for your old iPhone. Let's say you bought last year. You bought an iPhone 5S last year, and now you're thinking, oh man, what did I do? I want this new iPhone 6. Is it in good condition? Yes, it's in good condition. Look at that. $295 if you unlock it. They teach you how to unlock it. If you don't want to take the trouble, $270 on an AT&T locked iPhone. That's it, 5S. That's a great deal. That's a great deal. Now, here's the deal. You have till the 10th. You don't have to commit. Just you're getting the quote. I got the quote. If you decide to commit, you press the button, you check out. They'll send you a box, prepaid postage. They'll turn it around fast. If you forget to wipe the data, they will wipe it for you, and they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. If you like Amazon, that's a great deal because they bump that up 5%. And the beauty part of all of this is you can throw other things in this box. By the time you're done, you've got thousands of dollars sitting in that gadget drawer you have not capitalized on. Don't just start with the iPhone, but don't stop. They will buy old Surface computers, Apple Macs, MacBooks. They'll buy Google Nexus stuff. They'll buy Samsung phones, the Samsung tablets. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Cash is awaiting for your gadgets from Gazelle. To date, they have sent out $170 million to over 1 million customers. Lots of happy people with cash in their pockets. Thanks to Gazelle. Andrew K. Did any of you know Andrew K? I didn't know Andrew K. He created the K Pro computer, passed away this week at the age of 95. I do remember the K Pro very well. We all wanted one, but this is kind of a bit of computer history because this was a CPM machine that came with WordStar for $1,700.95. This was the competition for the Osborne One. Ohm, do you remember the K Pro?
I actually don't.
Yeah, nobody's old. Nobody's as old as me.
Amen to that.
I remember this very well. We actually have an Osborne One somewhere in the studio. But the K-Pro was with Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2010 Odyssey 2 on it. Steve Case bought one as his first computer. You may know the name Steve Case because he was the founder of America Online. It was a really exciting computer, and I'm just boring everybody to death. Andrew K, the creator of the K-Pro, I wanted to give him a tip of the hat because he really did create something that people really wanted. Look at this. This is what portable computing looked like in 1986.
That keyboard is so awesome.
Yeah, it is.
You fold it up. The keyboard went on the clipped onto the front of it. Thing is, the Osborne had this little tiny screen. This had like a 9-inch screen. Oh, wow. Blows your mind. See that? Two floppies, not one. Two floppies. Now, how much would you pay?
That's the Galaxy Note.
Yeah. This is the Galaxy Note of the 80s. I can't believe I'm working with people so young that they look at that and they just go, I don't understand what that is.
Oh, that's nonsense. We're both old.
That is a cruel thing to say about K-Pro. That is Galaxy Note.
That, well,
oh yeah, you're very.
They called them luggables because they were heavy. They were like 15 pounds.
That's why Apple won.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if you see the old Apples, they were not all that great looking.
No, I remember those in about the same time, mid 80s, and in school. Those little Apple, what were they?
They still, my kids went to kindergarten 20 years ago, they still had Apple IIs in the kindergarten, like eight of them.
Yeah, two.
And they were playing Oregon Trail. Did you play Oregon Trail?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Kids today. I think this is interesting. A lot of people tweeted me when this happened. TwitPic is shutting down. In the early days of Twitter, TwitPic was how you shared photos on Twitter. You'd upload them to TwitPic, put a link in your tweet. I never liked them much because that word twit in there kind of stepped on my brand. But what am I going to do about it? There's nothing I can do about it. A couple of years ago, Twitter trademarked the word tweet and invited all of the third-party developers making stuff for Twitter not to use twit, but to use tweet. If they had called themselves TweetPic, Twitter wouldn't have mind. Apparently, a few weeks ago, Twitter contacted TweetPic and said, you must abandon your trademark application. They had applied for a trademark in 2009 for TwitPic. And if you don't, they're not going to sue them, but we're going to cut you off from the API, which basically puts them out of business. If you can't post pictures on Twitter, well, there's no good. Remember, Twitter has its own photo service now and really doesn't want people to use third-party photo service. TwitPic said, oh, screw it, and they're shutting down.
I don't know if that is actually entirely true, that it's not complete full disclosure here on part of...
They probably were going to fold anyway, right?
Yeah, and I think you can change your name to something else. I mean, it's not like it's... The reason people use them because they were TwitPic, you know.
And I'm willing to bet that Twitter did not strong-arm them. I mean, this sounds like when you own a trademark, you have to defend your trademark. And you have to send letters that say, do this or you will face some sort of action. I can't imagine Twitter saying, this TwitPic, man, they've been a thorn in our side since day one.
But TwitPic has been around for like 4 years.
They have been, but they're no competitive threat to Twitter. I'm sure that Twitter's attorneys were just saying, we have to defend our trademark. This is, and like you said, I think this was like 2009 when they trademarked tweet and it became a capital word. Right. You know, Ohm is exactly right. This is not just because Twitter was defending their trademark and the bogeyman of Twitter we have to shut down. This is a nice spin on some backroom machinations.
They actually have usage guidelines on Twitter's website for how you can use Twitter's trademark safely and a recommendation to use tweet, not twit. I always flatter myself that they did that to protect us, but probably not. Yeah. A number of people said, if TwitPic's been put out of business by Twitter, can Twit be far behind? I would like to reassure you the Twit trademark predates Twitter. In fact, we're older than Twitter. We've been around longer, and we have had our trademark for a year before Twitter even existed. So no, they're not gonna go after us. And I think you're probably right. This was just convenient. But why be so vindictive? Do you think that TwitPic didn't like Twitter? This like one last chance to kick them before they die, or what?
I wonder if Twitter wants to just keep more of the property that's shared on Twitter as Twitter-owned stuff.
Of course, they
right?
did. Like they've killed all the third parties, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's clearly the main message here. The other thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, how is Twitter making its money? Is Twitter really valued appropriately as a company? Lots of people like to speculate on that, and it's worth speculating on. I mean, anybody I know who lives in San Francisco has just been driven out of the city because of the cost, largely brought about by Twitter's headquarters being in
Really, you don't blame Google and Apple, you blame Twitter.
Well, Twitter is right downtown.
Yeah.
Google and Apple are not. And people say, like, they built this giant campus. Everybody came down. And that whole area was gentrifying anyway. And the prices were going up for apartments and rent. But I kind of wonder, you know, like, have we seen enough from Twitter to really know what their value is and what they own and what they're doing to make money? It still feels pretty nebulous to me.
You know, I saw recently an article that, in fact, it isn't that expensive to live in New York. People always think, oh, that must be the most expensive city. It's not. What? Well, it's expensive, but it's not as bad as San Francisco.
Hey, you live in Petaluma.
That's why I live in Petaluma, baby. Yeah. Cheap up here.
I think it's easy to blame Twitter for the... But it's not really true. They employ, 3,000 people? Not all of them are in San Francisco, so they can't single-handedly, you know, inflate the property values in San Francisco. There is
I think they're a factor.
No, they're not the factor. The factor is that there's a whole bunch of landlords who are putting their apartments on Airbnb, which is what is inflating a lot of the real estate prices. The people are renting more through Airbnb, and as a result of that, there is much fewer properties for sale. And there has also been very little real estate development. I think there is a lot of... It's not an easy and simple problem. It's a much more complex issue, and to say that Twitter is, you know, responsible for that is just kind of overreaching. I think, you know, Twitter as a company, their valuation is actually much more more reasonable than most people realize compared to let's say something like, you know, Facebook. You know, Facebook's recent growth has come from all the mobile advertising or the mobile installs, the app installs they've been selling to other applications, which is essentially, you know, all these VC-backed startups which are out there pushing their apps. They're giving money to Facebook. I think if somebody needs to look into the revenues, you should look into the revenues of Facebook, because they are, you know, they're not as great as they seem to be. You know, Twitter is doing what it's supposed to do as a company which doesn't know how to grow its user base to make as much money as it can. They have struggled on one thing, which is to grow its user base to make it valuable to people who are like, were not hardcore, you know, internet nerds in many ways. I think average people find Facebook more interesting, and, you know, Twitter is struggling to find those people and get them on their own platform. I think that is the real Twitter problem.
We did hear this week that Twitter was considering using some sort of edge ranking to change the feed. And boy, there's a petition and people are furious. As you know, the way Facebook's news feed works is very algorithmically controlled. We actually talked a lot about it over the last couple of weeks. Robert Scoble even showed me how to make my Facebook feed better. Because you don't see everything your friends share on Facebook. You do currently on Twitter. Your timeline of Twitter is composed entirely of everything tweeted by everybody you follow. But the story was, and I don't know if this has been confirmed by Twitter, that Twitter was looking at ways to change that, to make it more valuable by eliminating stupid tweets or something. Have you, what is that something Twitter said it's going to do, Om, or is that?
Well, they did indicate that they will be using more machine learning to, you know, to make adjustments to their feed. And I don't know how, to what extent they're going to do that. I have no idea personally. I do think that we are all headed towards a future where, you know, you're going to have the machines making a lot of decisions on our behalf. And I think Twitter is probably part of that bigger trend. I think Facebook is part of that bigger trend. I mean, why do we assume that things won't change at all these companies? I mean, they are essentially companies. And just because they were cute and cuddly in their early days doesn't mean...
I want them to stay babies cute and cuddly.
Right? Well, yeah, like, and it would be irresponsible.
You're still cute
for them
and cuddly, Om. Why should Twitter not stay cute and cuddly?
Because I refuse to grow up. That's my fault.
This story actually came out of Giga Om. Twitter's CFO implied that the a Facebook style, Matthew Ingham's writing, Facebook style filtered feed is coming, whether you like it or not. And of course, a lot of Twitter users don't like the idea. I mean, it feels like we should have a place for an unfiltered stream like Twitter. And if you like the filtered stream, go use Facebook. I'm sorry, I stepped on you, Dan. What were you saying?
Oh, no, not one bit. I think that it would be irresponsible if Facebook or if Twitter and every other company, we're not too, these are public companies. They have to explore things like this, yeah. Right? Whether it's going to be implemented, how it would be implemented is just internet going, rah, 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 rah. I mean, the rest is just... time will tell.
You know, a little bit of machine intelligence is important because, like, look at just the sheer level of noise is so much right now. I think it's like, you know, applying the Dolby system right. More than anything else.
Right.
Sometimes people ask me about how I use Twitter, like parents or people who don't understand it. And I like to say I kind of like roulette wheel it. You know, like, it's all about what time of day I'm looking at my feed. And how fast did I scroll my finger on my mobile device? Like, I really don't have... Sometimes I have, you know, like my lists that I follow and I'll look for specific things. But most of the time, it really is like a roulette wheel. And I like that. It's a surprise. It's like flipping through a magazine. So I have people that I follow. I follow a good number of people. It's a whole bunch of different interests. And I like that, like, randomness of it. And Facebook, I find completely boring. Like, I hope to never again write a story about Facebook because it's just a place where people talk, where people share pictures of their grandkids, and I'm completely bored by it. And I have been. I felt bored with Facebook for like a year or two, and I don't know. I there comes a point where, you know, I understand that they are technology companies at heart in one way or another, but I almost feel like we don't need to cover everything that's going on with Facebook. Yeah. And we don't need to have articles talking about, is Facebook a trend anymore? Is Facebook dying? Like, who cares?
I think the next big trend, if it's not coming, it's already here, is exhaustion. I mean, I think that you can... The feed metaphor is fine. It's established if it's not already over, and people are kind of, you know, Pinterest's interest 2 years ago was, and their quick rise 2 years ago showed that people are kind of into looking at things that look different. But I think that if there is a big trend coming, it is just exhaustion. There's too much noise in the system. That may be an opportunity for Twitter. They may be able to say, look, we'll capture your interest graph and not the graph of your social, you know, the all of the backdoor bragging that you have to do on Facebook. But I think that people are just exhausted of social media. And I think that that there is just, I think, like, the next big app is no app. Right?
I like it.
Wait, Dan, I want to call Dan out on something for a second. So a couple of days ago, Dan posted on Google Plus that he had given up Gmail and that he had quit Facebook. And then today, Dan, it's so funny, I got a Facebook friend request from
Dan.
You. So
The reason for that was I had a friend who, like, I mean, he posted a suicide note on Facebook.
Oh,
so
dear.
I came back to Facebook. But I mean, there was a reason I came back.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah.
I mean, Leo, like you, I constantly want to kill my Facebook with strangly. But I had a friend who I thought was strangling himself. So I came back.
Oh, my God.
Facebook.
Is he okay?
He is okay. But that is one thing that I have found Facebook useful for. I think, like you, Leo, and like a lot of people, I'm just exhausted with Facebook in that I don't want to brag. I don't want to see other people bragging. I just want to connect with people I love. But it is one of those things where, my God, when I had a moment of terror, I sure as hell didn't go to Twitter. I mean, I went back to Facebook to make
sure
this
guy was okay.
Yeah, you're
not going to tweet him.
Right. No, of course. And in fact, I did go to Twitter and I found that he had long ago deleted his accounts. Why? Because he didn't feel like he was making a personal connection with people. And Facebook is where he did think he was making a personal connection with people.
Well, and yet that's kind of why I don't like the algorithmic stuff on Facebook, because it gets in the way. I just want to see my friend's stuff, and it just gets in the way of that.
Sorry to be a dick about that.
You guys kiss and make up. Well, yeah.
I'm just saying there was a reason for coming back.
I
did leave Gmail, though. I mean, I mapped 188,000.
Why leave Gmail?
Yeah, I want to hear about this. I want to hear about this, too.
Okay, so it's not explicitly anti-Google or anti-Facebook, but part of my thought process when I approach the social web and social apps is learning the mechanics of how these things work. Just like a video game or any kind of game, you have to learn the fundamental principles of the things that make these things sticky. And part of me, I mean, we can look at Snowden's revelations last year and say, you know, all of the conversations that we've had in the last year and a half or so about privacy. I am somebody who loves PGP, and I do make sure that I take encryption seriously. But I also, when I approach the social web, I really want to make sure that I'm not just – that I'm dogfooding the advice I give to people and saying, look, let's look at the mechanics here that make a Gmail – almost more sticky than Facebook. I mean, it's easier to leave Facebook than it is to leave Gmail. And so I just wanted to see if there is something that is robust. I always use Google Apps, right? I don't use pure Gmail. But I wanted to see if there is something, a product that is as robust in terms of my mail exchange, my mail servers, and that could handle, I mean, I literally have 200,000 email in here. And I mean, I'm on every press release ever since. So I wanted to see if there's something that can handle the high volume of email that I get, but filter out the noise and let me see just the signal, and could handle, you know, Google Apps is pretty robust. I wanted to see if there's something that can handle that. And I wanted to test my own stickiness to a Google product. I mean, am I beholden to this thing that is Google as much as I am to the thing that is Facebook? So it took a week, literally a week of IMAP ports, but I ported everything over to Fastmail and did the name server stuff there, and it seems to be holding up pretty well.
Actually, I've been using Fastmail for years. I just renewed my Fastmail account for five years. But I still use, you know why I use Gmail? The only reason is spam filtering. It's got the best spam filtering ever. So I just pump my mail through Gmail. I don't actually use Gmail. I just I borrow the spam filtering. I pump it through Gmail.
Hostini, yeah.
And then it's great.
Right.
That's the only reason to use Gmail.
All right. So that was my little tech test of the last week. Like, you know, can I leave these social services? And is there an app that is as robust as
this is
Gmail?
The new thing. I think I think this is you're going to see a lot of this. People just throwing up their hands in dismay and saying, I give up. I quit.
I think there is a more moderate way of doing these things. I have taken a more, not as drastic an approach as Dan, but what I have done is I've removed both Twitter and Facebook from my iPhone and from my mobile devices.
Yeah, that's what I did too.
Good call, yeah.
And I use them twice or thrice a day for Twitter and twice a day for Facebook on my desktop.
That's a good idea.
So if I'm not at home and I'm moving about, I am not looking into the phone every 5 minutes to see what the hell is going on, who's sharing their cat videos or whatever. I mean, and the other thing which I did on my Facebook is I started unfriending people who kept putting up their cat pictures and their baby pictures. It's like, not interested. So that was a very drastic move on my part, but I just think those were the two things which irritated me most about Facebook was cat pictures and pictures of their babies. It's like, okay. I mean, seriously.
We did a whole thing before Twit last week with Robert Scoble. It's going to be aired on September 29th, by the way, people were wondering. It is a triangulation episode where he attempted to show me how to cultivate my Facebook feed to make it better. A lot of it was exactly that, just getting rid of people that don't give you content you want. And it's gotten better, but it's still not anything I'd want.
Could you imagine if we did that in real life? If I was like, Leo, don't show me pictures of your kids anymore. I don't care. It's so
funny. That's the beauty of Facebook. You can do it and then nobody knows.
Like our psychology and the way that we interact socially is so different online than it is face to face.
I got a number of people who tried to refriend me after I unfriended about 100 people, and quite a large number of them asked to be my friend again. And now I feel guilty.
But Jill, when you saw baby pictures, when you met people, you went to their house, you're meeting them for coffee. It was in real life, so it was essentially one set of pictures, maybe a day. This is
constant.
Like 500 pictures in a day is just a bit too much. I think.
Yeah, but I mean that's what you get if you meet somebody face to face now and they show you on their phone, the pictures of their dog or their kids or whatever. And I don't unfriend these people. Like I don't use Facebook very often, but my sister and her kids, that's the main place where my sister posts photos of her kids. And I have to check in on that every now and again because I'm a good aunt and that's what we do, right? So, this is my selfless act of using Facebook as I go in and I check in on the baby pictures from time to time.
You're doing your duty.
No, I think that's more like...
I think it is a socially responsible way to stay in touch with people, right? Like, to show that I'm using...
You help clear their crops in Farmville and...
deeply engaged in them. I'm still using them. I'm still participating. It may be very lightweight, but I'm at least presenting that appearance that I'm there and I participate.
I think that's trying to be less, prove to yourself and feel less guilty about everything.
You're a good person.
We all like to use Facebook for that reason. Oh, wow, birthday. Happy birthday, so-and-so. Do we really mean it? Probably not.
Yeah, Facebook is social grease now. It's not real social engagement. It's getting now. Let's just check to see. I did everything Scoble wanted me to do, and I went through it. And let's see if I've really cleaned. There's a baby picture. Let's see if there's a baby picture. Oh, there's a Brussels going to New York. Here's an ad. Here's a baseball picture. Yeah, it's still crap. It's still crap. And here's a ballerina.
Maybe you need better friends.
That's what he said. He said you should get better friends.
Unfriend Scoble first.
Yeah, that's the first thing. Yeah, see, he said follow more. You want to follow me more. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. We've got a great panel. It's nice to have Dan Patterson here. What is your affiliation these days? What are you up to, Dan?
I just did some writing for the Washington Post, and this summer I did a long form study on the trafficking of guns on the so-called Iron Pipeline, and the data behind gun trafficking here in New York City.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time you were on. Have you published that? Has that been published now?
Yeah. You can find that at contently.org. So I'm just a writer. I mean,
a writer, he says. A writer.
It's all maybe a reporter. Maybe
Angels of Death. So who does – what is this? This is an interesting site, contently.org. What is this?
Well, you must know Contently. Do you guys use them?
No, we don't, unfortunately. But I do know them, and they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Contently makes a number of products, but this one, Contently.org, is specifically intent to fund long-form investigative journalism. Yeah. So this was a two-month report. Awesome. I know Jill's working on a long thing right now, too, right?
Are you, Jill? What are you working on?
Yeah, I'm working on something. Well, PC Mag is still my bread and butter, and I'm working on something right now freelance for Prevention Magazine. About the future of health and technology. So that's been really interesting because I'm digging into it from a different side and interviewing a lot of doctors and people in the healthcare industry and trying to see, you know, what do we see happening in this first generation of fitness and health trackers, but where is that going to lead in 10, 15, 20 years?
Transhumanism.
Yeah. We're no longer going to be in our bodies. We will be in space, in the galaxy. One of our viewers just sent me an FDA document about rules for health trackers. And those have been changed a little bit, probably to accommodate this new wave of health trackers. Is that right?
From what I understand, there's a very clear line about something being FDA approved and something that does not need to be FDA approved. And that's, does it make a diagnosis? So if it makes a diagnosis, you have to have FDA approval and you have to have some kind of, usually some kind of oversight with your doctor. So you can't just use these devices on your own generally when they are FDA approved. If something is not making a diagnosis, then it doesn't have to be. One of the blurriest lines is with sleep trackers. Well, I shouldn't say it's a blurry line because the people who make the devices know exactly where the line is and they never cross it. But something as common as sleep apnea is considered a disease. So if you have a sleep tracker, you cannot with it diagnose someone as having sleep apnea. You have to say, here's the data that you've collected. You should look at it, decide for yourself what it means. So that's the very fine line that fitness trackers try not to cross, because if they do, they have to go through this long approval process. One of the most interesting products I've been following that is pending FDA approval is called Scanadu Scout. So this has been in the news for the last year and a half or so. People like to call it the tricorder. So if you're a Star Trek fan.
Oh, yeah.
It's a handheld device. I have actually tried it on myself. So it's a little disc, and it has it takes a number of your vital signs. So your heart rate, your EKG reading, temperature, and a few other things. So you hold it up to your forehead, and while you're making that other connection with your finger, it's completing that circuit to take the EKG. And the idea is it's giving you an overall picture of your health because it's taking so many different data streams. So one of the criticisms of modern day trackers is they usually have only one or two things that they monitor, whereas Scanadu is collecting, I don't know, it's about five or six different data points. And the guy who made it is actually this really interesting inventor. He developed it, I believe, if I remember correctly, he has a story about his son getting sick. And they go to the doctor, they go to the hospital, they're collecting all this information in the hospital. Nurses are coming in and taking his vital signs every so often. He's hooked up to machines. And this guy, Walter DeBrower is his name, was just like, this is crazy. This is my kid. I should be able to have this information. Right. I should be able to see this data myself. We should own this stuff. So he's a really interesting guy because he's a proponent that the FDA shouldn't be as strict and that we should be allowed to have more devices that collect information about ourselves because it's our body. It's our data. We should be allowed to have that. So that's one device I'm just like on the edge of my seat waiting for this thing to be approved, but it could take years.
Well, so this document is kind of interesting. It is non-binding, but it says the intent of the FDA to no longer require pre-market notification requirements for some medical devices because they're well understood and do not present risks. And, you know, if you look through the FDA database, current database of devices that have been submitted to approval for the FDA, Apple has nothing in there. Remember, Apple did meet with the FDA, and I imagine that part of the meeting was to say, well, how much do we have to get approval for? And it feels like the FDA has decided that at least when it comes to these Apple devices, either it's going to be third parties applying for approval or Apple may not even need to apply for approval.
Apple is really good about working with its developers. Oh, yeah. So I wonder if part of this was to say, what we're going to do is provide a platform everybody else is going to handle the devices. Some of them are even going to handle different software and apps. We're just going to be the platform where everything comes in. I wonder if that was kind of the direction of the conversation. Right. But, you know, it's Apple. They have meetings with everybody.
And they have cloud. And nobody says no to a meeting with Apple, as we've already established on this show. Om Malik is also here from GigaOm.com, back from his world travels. What are you excited about? One of the things everybody should read, Om every week posts on the weekend, his weekend reads, which is a great source for just interesting, provocative stuff. And you're still doing that, of course.
I took the summer off.
Are you going to come back and do it?
Yeah.
Good.
Starting next week.
Good. Yeah. Because that I loved. I really loved that. And what else are you up to? Anything else you'd like to mention?
No, just, you know, doing my thing, you know, traveling, right? Meeting interesting people always. And, you know, I will let you know how I feel about the Apple event on Tuesday.
And we're going to grab you. We're going to have a camera crew down there. And if we can find you, I'd love to grab you and get your opinion afterwards.
I'll be there.
Good.
You know,
good.
Better we'll jacket, for you. Too. On your show.
Yeah, you'll be all dressed up. It'll be great. Our show today, we're going to have a few final words in a second. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at stamps.com. Anybody who does a lot of mailing ought to know about stamps.com. It happens to me. It just happened again the other day. People send me stuff for review to look at, postage due. And I was like, you're expected to pay $1.49 to me, the post office says, if you want to see what's in this package. That's crazy. That's not a good way to introduce yourself to somebody. If you send stuff out via mail and you're not using stamps.com, you're not looking as professional as you could. Stamps.com, first of all, eliminates the trip to the post office, lets you print your own postage with your computer, your printer. You don't need a postage meter or special ink or anything. They have a great USB scale that would eliminate the postage due problem because it automatically prints exactly the right amount of postage. So you'd put neither too little, nor, I think a lot of people do this, too much. Before I got stamps.com, I was always putting in a couple extra stamps on there, just in case. That's a waste of money. Stamps.com also looks more pro because it can go right on your envelope. You print right to the envelope with your company's logo, the postage, of course, the recipient's address, and your address, all pre-filled. It will read the information from eBay, Amazon, Etsy, so you don't have to enter anything in all of the sites. It will automatically fill out customs forms if you're mailing internationally. And you get discounts you can't get at the post office at stamps.com on priority mail, on insurance. It's all automatic. It's all simple to use. And we have got a really good trial offer for you. If you visit stamps.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use our offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. For an offer, I don't think they even offer this on the front page anymore. This is a great deal. $55 in free postage. You get a free digital scale. You get a $5 supply kit. And, of course, a four-week trial of stamps.com. Stamps.com, give it a try today. Absolutely the best way to start sending your letters and packages. Over 2 billion letters and packages were sent this year via stamps. 2 billion via stamps.com. Apple is going to live stream the event, by the way. And if you go to apple.com/live, you get the countdown clock. They're really treating this like a big deal. So I'm glad they're streaming it. A little word, you have to use an Apple device to watch it. You cannot stream it on a Windows PC. Oh, don't you love Apple? Live streaming video requires Safari on OS X or an Apple TV. I presume you could do it on an iPad as well. So can we find Chad an Apple TV so we can watch?
You don't have an Apple?
I think we have an Apple.
I think we already have one.
Yeah. Safari for Windows, right?
What are you using?
No, for what?
The desktop.
For life? Desktop. I'm using a Mac. I could just stream it from here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to hide the label, but it came. It's all cruddy now, so I need to get a Snow White sticker or something.
You know, you need like your own screen with your own logo on it.
You can get it. We actually did the research. There's companies that will mill new aluminum backs with the Twit logo on it. But it's like $500. I should do it.
Dude, don't be cheap.
I'm cheap.
Come on.
No, really.
Should we do a Kickstarter for you?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, help Leo have a special laptop lid. That's about all you get from Kickstarter anyway. Anything I missed, Microsoft is going to appeal the court order. Says we're not going to give hand over Irish email stored on Irish servers. That's a good thing, but they'll lose in the end, I imagine, and then they'll hand them over. So big deal, right? Here's a story. New Zealand internet users were so keen to see naked celebrity pictures, they actually crashed the entire nation's internet. Telecommunications giant Spark, it took them till Sunday to repair what it called, what it termed a dynamic cyber attack overloading its system because everybody was trying to get pictures at the same time. So just, you know, spread it out. You let your neighbors get it, then you get them, okay? Don't do it. Don't try to do it all at once. I think we've seen the week of IFA. We've seen everything. It's time to wait and see what Apple says. We will do that coverage live starting at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC, Tuesday, September 9th. Join me, Mike Elgin, Sarah Lane, and Alex Lindsay as we cover the live event. And then immediately after a special Mac Break Weekly, iJustine will join us. Andy Iannocco and Renee Ritchie live from Cupertino. Maybe O'Malik if we can grab him. Who knows? I don't know who else will be there, but we'll get as many people as we can to give you their impression of whatever Apple announces and whether it is a world changer or just another ho-hum list of products. Thank you, Dan Patterson, for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great to see you again.
You too.
O'Malik, you're the best. He once called me the Yoda of technology reporting, but in fact, you are the Yoda. You are the man. Yeah. It's always good to see you. GigaOM.com. And of course, thank you so much, Jill Duffy, for being here in your
my pleasure.
Very attractive jumpsuit. Nice to have you. Does it have any health in certs, you know, things in there at all?
No, not this one. I like to say this is my Three's Company outfit. It's a little blast back there.
Come and knock on our door. If you missed, thank you guys for being here. We appreciate it. If you missed anything this week on Twit, we had a very fun week. And, of all the Twit promos we've done, I think this reflects very accurately what it was like this week on Twit. Watch.
Last time on Twit.
If you bring a laptop, just a little tip, you can turn it around and FaceTime it. Apple invitations have gone out. Did you get one?
I did.
Shut up. You're all going.
You think you just fell off the list?
They used to love me. They don't even know I exist.
Twit Live Specials.
Gear S brings the freedom of a smartphone to your wrist. For any software updates, you have to reconnect to a Galaxy product. Freedom.
Apparently a new definition of freedom.
Tech News Today.
Well, Christina Warren, you wrote a really interesting piece called How I Hacked My Own iCloud Account for Just $200.
Even with two-factor authentication on, I was able to download my iCloud backups from the cloud without any sort of prompt, any sort of notification.
The Social Hour.
PewDiePie, very popular YouTube celebrity, turned off comments.
YouTube comments are such a cesspool.
This Week in Google.
I think the world needs a verified social network. Jeff, what do you think? I already registered verified.zone.
I know a lot of a-holes by name.
Twit. Technology isn't always pretty, but we are.
You're so pretty. We're so gross.
Oh, that's, I can't unsee that. We got a big week ahead, and I think Mike Elgin, our news director, has it all lined up. Mike, what's coming up?
Coming up this week, the big event is Apple's announcement at the Flint Center in Cupertino. The company's expected to unveil a couple of new iPhones and a smartwatch. Our live coverage will happen right here at live.twit.tv starting at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. TNT will take place at 9 a.m. Pacific on that day with our Apple coverage immediately following. Also, Reddit, Foursquare, Etsy, Kickstarter, Mozilla, Vimeo, and other sites are planning a net neutrality day of action on Wednesday, September 10th. They'll showcase net neutrality issues on their sites and invite visitors to post comments on the FCC, Congress, and White House websites in support of strong net neutrality. The protest is scheduled for just a few days before the end of the FCC's public comments period on Monday, the 15th. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you. Mike Elgin, News Director, TNT, Monday through Friday, normally 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC. We'll be doing a little bit early on Tuesday to make room for the Apple event. Thank you, Dan Patterson, O'Malik. Thank you, Jill Duffy. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.